Whether you drive a car, need a car, or just occasionally bum a ride with friends, you've come to the right place.
Join the editors of Consumer Guide Automotive as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
Here's your host, Tom Appel.
All right, I am Tom Appel, and this is episode 99 of the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. Thanks for joining us today. Hey, when you get a chance, please check us out at consumerguide.com. While you're there, be sure to check out our Best Buy picks. This list is an excellent starting place if you are looking for a new car or truck. You also want to check out our blog for complete reviews of all the vehicles we're driving here at Consumer Guide and all sorts of other fun stuff. And this is important, you can catch up on back episodes of the podcast right there on our homepage. All right, let's see who's online with us today. She is the managing editor of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk, and her freelance work can be found all over the internet. Hello, Jill Simonello.
Hello, Tom Appel.
How are you?
I am doing very well. Yeah.
Ask me how I am.
Do I have to?
No.
Okay, how are you? I'll do it anyway.
I'm all right.
Why just all right?
Just all right. I don't know. I'm good. I feel sleepless. Like I don't know. I could have used another hour.
Sleepless in Seattle or Chicago? Sleepless in Chicago.
I'm in Morton Grove.
Okay. Sleepless in Illinois. I actually slept very well last night, so I am sorry for your lack.
I think if you're looking for a community that sounds less cool than Seattle or Chicago, Morton Grove is the way to go.
Yeah. Yeah, that would probably be correct.
It could be an Alsip, but...
Well, you know, I guess, or Cottage Grove, maybe? I don't know.
Cottage Grove is good.
It makes me think of cottage cheese.
Is Cottage Grove a community, or is that just a street?
I think it's a community.
Is it? All right. Jill, I have a super fast quiz for you. Tell me you're ready.
I'm ready.
All right. Jill, per Automotive News, what were the best-selling electric vehicles in the United States through July of this year?
Okay, that's not a super quick quiz, but I'm just going to go generally with Tesla.
Well, I need three.
Oh, models. Top three? Three models. Tesla Model 3, Nissan Leaf, because that's perennial, and then Volkswagen ID4.
ID4 didn't make the list yet. You were Tesla Model Y, 94,000, Model 3, 68,000, and the Chevy Bolt, 22,000.
So I'm kind of surprised about the Bolt in light of their, you know, issues.
Well, it hadn't happened yet in July, so.
Fair.
There you go. All right. He's a senior editor here at Consumer Guide, and his treatise on 19th century Portuguese currency manipulation is required reading at local junior colleges. Hello, Damon Bell.
I'm working up a multimedia presentation for that content.
I am looking forward to that.
It's edge of your seat stuff, let me tell you.
Yeah, what the Portuguese were doing with the Escudo, unforgivable.
You don't have to tell me.
Well, you literally wrote the book on the issue.
Sure, I did.
Hey, Damon, what's going on in the show today?
Well, Portuguese currency aside, how about we spend the first segment talking about what vehicles impressed us most this year?
Sounds good.
So let's get to that in the first segment. In the next segment, we've got a very interesting guest on the show. His name is Scott Case, and he is the co-founder and CEO of Recurrent. That is a company that is taking data from owners of electric vehicles and compiling that data to give prospective EV buyers kind of a sense of what a used EV might be like. So there's a lot of interesting stuff there, and that'll be fun for us to talk about in the next segment. But yes, before we get to that, let's share we're a little over halfway through the year now, actually a little bit more than halfway through the year.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of new stuff that's come out despite the pandemic and what have you in terms of new vehicles. So let's just go around and each share our picks for vehicles we've driven so far this year that really impressed us. So, Tom, what's something that you've driven this year that's made a real impression on you?
Yeah, there were two cars, and I mentioned one before. I thought the newly refreshed, and I know it's not massively refreshed, but the Nissan Kicks, just fun to drive, but and I think a better value than people think it is. But the vehicle that really took me by surprise this year is the Hyundai Santa Fe. I like the old Santa Fe, and I like the new Santa Fe even more. And we just recently had through the office the Calligraphy, which is the new top-line trim level of that vehicle. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't possibly be more impressed with that vehicle. I'm convinced that if even auto journalists were blindfolded, put in the passenger seat and taken for a spin, they would not know they weren't in a very expensive vehicle.
Hmm. So, Jill, I think you are also impressed by a Hyundai this year?
I am. Probably the single most impressive vehicle that I've driven this year, and I was completely shocked by this, by the way, is the Hyundai Santa Cruz. And so that's the new compact pickup truck from Hyundai. It's built on the same platform that the Tucson is built on, which is also all new for the 2022 model year. But it's a little bit longer. It obviously has a truck bed, and I'm sticking with the fact that I'm going to call it a pickup truck, even though Hyundai wants to call it sport activity vehicle.
Yeah.
Or no, sport adventure vehicle is
adventure,
what they're calling it.
Yes.
Because BMW has already coined the term on sport activity vehicle.
Yes.
So
right.
I'm calling it a pickup truck because walks like a duck, talks like a duck, it's a duck. But I know I got a lot of hate mail on that one the last time I did it in another forum. So I apologize in advance, Tom, if you get email about me calling it a pickup truck. But no, the reason why I was really impressed is because it was very unexpected. And it has a turbocharged engine, and it was peppy and fun and nimble and maneuverable, and it just... I mean, the compact size of the pickup certainly weighs into that, but the driving dynamics were completely unexpected. I mean, I expected it to be a little bit more like the Tucson, but it was, I'm gonna coin a word here that's completely grammatically incorrect, but I'm gonna say it was funner.
Interesting. So I'll give my picks real fast, and then let's kind of circle back and we'll talk about each of our picks in more detail. My picks are, frankly, I would say pretty obvious ones. That is the Ford Bronco Sport.
Okay.
And the Ford Mustang Mach-E. Both very high profile, very groundbreaking new vehicles for Ford. So those are my picks. But yes, let's talk about that Santa Fe. The Santa Fe itself was redesigned and repositioned for 2019.
Right.
And usually when an all-new vehicle comes out, it's like 2 to 3, maybe 4 years before manufacturers do what is called a mid-cycle enhancement or a mid-cycle refresh. An all-new redesigned vehicle comes out. They do a significant freshening that lasts for maybe a couple more years after that, and then a full redesign. What would you say, on average, maybe 5, 6, 7 years down the line of a new vehicle being introduced?
Yeah, but that's basically the cycle.
Yeah, but the refresh that the Hyundai Santa Fe underwent for 2021 is one of the most substantial mid-cycle refreshes I think I've seen in my time reviewing cars. There's just so many upgrades that were done, new powertrains, including hybrid and plug-in hybrid powertrains, and exterior restyle, significant interior freshening as well. It's such a thorough and impressive update that, yeah, I'm right with you there, Tom, in finding this one of the most impressive vehicles I've driven this past year.
And it is convincingly upscale. That's what impresses me so much about the Calligraphy trim level. The test vehicle that we had through the office came to $44,000, which if you're a longtime Hyundai fan, you think, well, that's a lot of money for a Hyundai. But it's not a lot of money for a midsize crossover, and especially not one in a top trim level with a bunch of power. And Also, this is key too. Hyundai and turbocharged engines have not always been the best mixture. But this is a very good drivetrain. It's very smooth. It's very progressive. You don't really know that it's a turbo. It just feels kind of like a big torquey engine, which is great. Additionally, Hyundai, not generally known for good ride and handling balance, though it always seems like their crossovers are better than their cars. This car nailed it. The Santa Fe, incredibly competent handler and just really luxury level ride control. And it's super quiet.
Yeah, and the other thing we should mention, too, that is a benefit of the Santa Fe even before this update, for a lot of shoppers, it is that just right size. It's,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
We categorize it as a midsize SUV, but it is strictly a two-row, five-passenger midsize SUV. But within that, so you don't get the versatility of a third-row seat anymore. Previous Santa Fe versions have had it. But it's appreciably bigger than, say, a Honda CR-V or a Toyota RAV4 or Hyundai's own Tucson, but it's usefully more compact than something like a Honda Pilot or a Toyota Highlander. So kind of a Goldilocks vehicle for a lot of people in that just right size category.
It is.
I have to say, I have like my favorite thing and my least favorite thing is basically the same thing on this vehicle. And I have to tell you, I definitely agree on how upscale it is. But the lighting signatures. So I loved the way they redesigned the front headlights. I don't know if you noticed how like the front daytime running lights kind of fork down into the headlight with the two bands.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I thought it looked really cool. It's a unique design. But the lighting signature is also a bit of a downfall when you move to the back because did you notice where the rear blinker is? It's on the bottom of the rear bumper. And when you're in traffic, that is really hard to see. And that has been a criticism of mine on Hyundai vehicles, you know, for about a year now because they did it on the Tucson as well. And it's funny. Because I remarked specifically, they did not do that on the Santa Cruz. They changed the lighting signature on the Santa Cruz so that the blinker moves up in the rear bumper, and you don't miss it if you're like too close in traffic or something. But yeah, so it's both my favorite thing and my least favorite thing about the Santa Fe.
Jill, I wanted to talk about the Santa Cruz for a moment because. Mm-hmm. Your insistence on calling it a pickup aside, I think that this vehicle's success, and I think it's going to be very successful, is going to be based not on the fact that it's a pickup, but that people will perceive it more or less as a pickup, but that it works so well as a crossover. It has a trunk, so that serves the function of a rear hatch. The bed is actually very small. You have a reasonable amount of rear seat space, though not quite as much as you might in a compact crossover, but I think that this vehicle sort of tells people that you're cool and adventurous without you taking any serious risks. And I think that that's why this vehicle is going to be so popular.
You know, I totally agree. This has so many cool, clever little features from the in-bed storage that, you know, it's not as big as what you'd see in the Honda Ridgeline because they also have the in-bed storage, but it has some really good storage. It has tie downs. You can fit bicycles back there. You have under seat storage in the rear seat. And so you have like all the functionality of an SUV, but you have that added utility of that truck bed for trips to IKEA or Home Depot or.
Well, you sort of do. I mean, it's a 4-foot bed. It's overachieving for a 4-foot bed.
Well, I mean, okay, and I have this argument with my boss all the time about pickup trucks. How many people actually use a pickup truck, you know, to put, I mean, your do-it-yourselfers are, your construction guys, workers.
You. People
but
buy trucks that don't need them.
It is the perfect size for somebody who is making this more of a everyday family lifestyle vehicle. And it has the right, I think, the right amount of utility for things.
Yeah, but I want to talk about the Bronco Sport real quick before we run out of time.
Yes.
Yeah, so Jill, something you said about the Santa Cruz is one of the things I really like about the Bronco Sport. And as you poke around the Bronco Sport, it's very apparent how much thought Ford designers put into real-world use. Mm-hmm. the little cargo tie downs in the bed, the some of them have a flip up hidden storage compartment underneath the passenger side rear seat. There's these really clever LED lights built into the lift gate. Mm-hmm. Just all these things that you can tell they paid so much attention to how customers were actually going to use these in a adventure camping setting or just in an everyday use setting. So that's one of the main things that impressed me about the Bronco Sport.
I think that's going to sell really well.
I agree. I like the size. To me, it's also similar to the Santa Fe. It's another one of those right-sized vehicles, because it works great in a city urban environment, but, you know, will also be comfortable enough to take a road trip. And the clever features, the unique design, you know, I think all of that plays into the what makes that such a surprisingly refreshing vehicle.
Yeah.
I might push back on road trip. Did that ride pretty well on the highway?
I thought it did. It wasn't something that maybe you want to drive from New York to California in, but to go to Indianapolis, I think that's perfect.
I think it gives up some, because of the focus on off-road capability, it does give up some on-road refinement, but I think Ford hit that balance correctly, and in the same way people will accept the shortcomings in on-road refinement in a Jeep Wrangler, so mm-hmm. too will they accept them in the Bronco Sport. And the other thing I'm impressed with the Bronco Sport is there was an attention paid to efficiency. The base engine mm-hmm. in the Bronco is a 3-cylinder. We got very good fuel economy in the base engine Bronco Sport test vehicle we had. So I appreciate that there's some at least a bit of eco responsibility folded into the Bronco's design as well, with the 3-cylinder engine and the very compact overall dimensions, which, by the way, it would be great. A Bronco Sport would be great if I was a single guy living in the city, but that rear seat is too small for kids. So I wouldn't categorize it as a family vehicle, but mm-hmm. for an accessible, versatile, efficient vehicle that is oozing with personality and a fun
oozing
and a fun design attitude, and frankly the ability to personalize it, the Bronco Sport's hard to beat.
Speaking of oozing, we've got all sorts of other stuff for you to do today.
Oh, I'm glad you said that, because I could have gone really south.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Scott Case of Recurrent. Stick around. Hey, it's Tom. Did you know that with Electrify America's vast electric vehicle charging network, you can now drive your EV from coast to coast? And with their ultra-fast charging stations, you'll get back on the road even faster. With more than 650 convenient locations nationwide, just pick your destination and hit the road. Visit ElectrifyAmerica.com and see how Electrify America is bringing freedom to EV drivers. That's ElectrifyAmerica.com.
Welcome back to the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, and I am Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, and I'm delighted that you're sticking around with us today. Hey, this is the part of the show when I strongly suggest that you follow me on Twitter. I am Car Guy Tom. That is car_guy_Tom on Twitter. I promise to entertain. All right, our guest today is the co-founder and CEO of Recurrent, an online provider of used car marketing services, used EV marketing services. Welcome to the Car Stuff Podcast, Scott Case.
Hello, how are you guys?
Really good. Scott, how are you?
I'm doing all right.
Scott, I want to thank you for joining us today. And before we go any further, I just want to say one thing. Recurrent is a great name.
Oh, my gosh. You should have heard the runner-up names. It was an absolute train wreck of brainstorming. So I'm really glad we ended up with Recurrent. I'll give you guys the exclusive on the worst name that we possible name.
Ooh, and
Yeah, this is like nobody knows this one. So it was Scott and Sons Internet Cars. That was the worst one we could come up with. It was not in contention, just to be clear, but it was like when we've had a little brainstorming for what's the worst possible one. And what's hilarious is I had one son, and so it was like the plural of Scott and Sons was just like, it just was too much.
Oh, man. But tell us about what Recurrent is, because I think you've got a great story here.
Thanks. Yeah. So if you've ever bought or sold a used car, you've used Experian or Carfax, you know, to understand like what the history is and what you're getting, basically. So we're doing that for used EVs. And really what that means is focusing on the battery. So everybody's had an iPhone long enough to know that, like, over time, the battery wears down just in a normal process. And, you know, so it means you can't talk all day anymore. And everybody kind of further has a mental model that an EV is just a giant iPhone with wheels on the side. And that's not exactly true, but, you know, I think for the purposes of understanding this is a reasonable analogy to make. So, you know, we're essentially helping people answer the question of how's the battery in that thing? And, like, what does that mean for the range you're going to get versus the EPA to the sticker range on the car, which honestly is wrong on day one, you know, because it doesn't account for weather variations. So we're helping used EV buyers and also actually turns out also EV owners that also want to understand how their battery is degrading over time so they can, you know, kind of know when to sell it and hopefully be able to sell it at a premium by keeping good care of the battery.
So how does that work? I woke up this morning, and because I'm hopelessly internet addicted, went to my phone, and the first thing I saw today was a sign up for free Recurrent offer for free battery reports. So you guys knew I was talking to you today. But how does this work?
I don't know. I'm going to have a word with the marketing department about what they're using for that. So if you are an EV owner, you know, our first product actually weirdly was a product for EV owners. You can go to our website, recurrentauto.com, and essentially just like sign up, share data from your car with us, and we give you a monthly battery report that helps you think about like essentially how to take care of it over time and how it compares to like the Tesla Model 3 that your neighbors have or whatever, and like how your battery is compared to theirs. So that's a free product that just for us, it's all about data collection so that we can then go and use that for our actual product, which is the Carfax style report. I don't want to hopefully the lawyers don't come after me, but yeah, it is a vehicle condition report that used car dealers will use to essentially like help their buyers understand like what's going on in these cars that are sitting on a used car lot.
Yeah, so we are really in the early stages of mass adoption of EVs, and so we are in the early stages of used EVs hitting the market. And I was looking at another article on Recurrent, and you had mentioned that battery health is, quote, the new odometer for electric cars. And I think that's a great way to look at it because you're really pinpointing the difference between an internal combustion engine vehicle, which has oil filters and belts and all kinds of consumable items that the mileage on an odometer will give you most of what you need to know. But EVs don't operate the same way, so we need to look at them a little bit different in the same way. So can you elaborate on what you mean by battery health being the new odometer for electric cars?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, to put a finer point on that drivetrain thing, is like there are 2,000 moving parts in a typical combustion engine drivetrain versus just 20 in an EV, right?
Oh, wow.
And all the value and all the cost is in the battery. There's one of those 20 parts that represents the vast majority of sort of understanding of like, you know, if you need to replace that thing, that's the whole ball game right there. Mm-hmm. So what I mean by odometers, you know, by battery health as a new odometer, is just like, it's just very much that like odometers aren't particularly relevant anymore. They're not a good indicator of the battery health. And so I'll give you two examples. on both sides of this issue, right? One is we saw a, 2013, I think it was, Nissan Leaf come through one of our dealers who's using one of our products with 19,000 miles. This is an eight-year-old car with 19,000 miles on it. If you saw that at a combustion engine vehicle, you'd be like, that's an amazing deal. I'm going to buy that thing, right, and pay a lot for it. Mm-hmm. That battery was cooked, absolutely cooked. It had been in a hot environment growing up, and it sort of growing up in its first 8 years, and it wasn't driven very much, and that's actually really bad for those cars, right? So that car had a barely 40-mile range in sort of like typical temperatures versus the EPA of 75. Now, there are actually, we've also seen older Nissan Leafs that have their EPA range or better, in fact. So it's not that everyone, I'm not picking on one particular manufacturer. The flip side of that, though, is like all the Chevy, every Chevy Bolt ever made, right? Like, obviously, a lot going on in terms of the recall that's been announced. And they are, so there's 100,000 Chevy Bolts on the road that are impacted this. Every one of them is going to get a brand new battery pack. And they have all kinds of big odometer readings on them, 2017, 18, 19 Bolts. You're going to have a whole bunch of cars out there with odometer readings of 25, 50, 75,000 miles with brand new batteries. It's basically a bunch of new cars, right?
Yeah.
And so there's two examples, but there is all kinds of variability that just the odometer isn't particularly, it's like the fourth or fifth best predictor of battery health from what we've seen in all of our data.
So, right. Scott, what are you seeing as typical degradation of the battery over, like, 4 or 5 years?
Yeah, so it really depends on so many things. So manufacturer differences, battery chemistry differences. But then it gets into even after they roll off the line, it gets into it's impacted by calendar age. It's impacted by exposure to temperatures, extreme temperatures over time. Charging patterns of like, what are you using? A lot of fast charging? Are you using, gentler charging systems? How you drive it? How fast you discharge it? The depth of discharge window, which is basically like what's your min and your max charge? Like all of those factors kind of go into or lead to the health of the battery over time.
So, I mean, I have to tell you, when you were talking about that Nissan Leaf with 40 miles of range, that has to be like in the either the back or the front of anybody's mind when they're thinking about buying a used EV. And it might scare some people off. So, I really like that you guys are trying to demystify this process. And I'm just wondering, okay, I'm Jill Consumer, and here I am. I want to buy a used EV. Like, what do I need to do to do my due diligence to make sure that I am not buying something that only has 40 miles of range?
That's where recurrent comes in. You basically need to ask your dealer for a recurrent report, which they can offer to you. And then we also, we're not everywhere yet. We're a pretty young company. So as we get up and running, we actually, on our website, we offer now a free instant battery analysis. So if you're a shopper, you walk onto the lot, and we're covering not every model of car yet, but we're covering Leafs, i3s, e-Golfs, and Tesla Model 3s. Right now, you can go onto a lot, take a picture of the dashboard, enter a couple of pieces of data, and then we actually provide an instant battery analysis sort of for a shopper in that way, and that's for free.
That's really cool. So, define what an instant battery report is. Like, do you know about that specific vehicle, or are you kind of providing some generalities?
We are using data from that specific vehicle, and that's where we're like, they've literally taken a picture of the dashboard, and then we're grabbing a couple of pieces of data. It's like when you deposit a check, on your iPhone now, you take a picture of the check and then you enter the amount. Mm-hmm. So we're doing the same kind of style thing. The information we're asking for is like different for each vehicle because it's always provided differently.
Okay.
And importantly, we're comparing that car that's just sitting on the lot to over 5,000 cars that are connected and receiving battery monthly battery reports from us. And so we're getting millions of data points from those cars. And so we can essentially do an apples to apples comparison for a car that we don't know as much about versus one that we know quite a bit about. So that's the statistical modeling approach that we're using.
Okay.
Yeah, so you mentioned that you've got around 5,000 data points, and those are current EV owners who have volunteered to allow Recurrent to collect data from their cars, which gives you a rich, deep well of data to pull from and some pretty detailed information. What are some of the interesting things that you have received data-wise from the owners? Anything that has surprised you?
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I just want to say, like, I mean, in terms of our understanding and this data set, this is, like, unique from anybody outside of the vehicle manufacturers. I mean, every vehicle manufacturer has a great sort of understanding of their own cars and what's going on in them. But no one, including the vehicle manufacturers, have this cross-manufacturer view that we have. So, like, I would say the big sort of, and we've now been looking and tracking this data for over the last year, the big takeaway for me is EV dashboards lie about range. Just straight up lie about range. And they do that in different ways for different manufacturers. There's two things really going on. One is the battery management systems, like there is just some inherent inaccuracies to them. And this is just to put this in perspective, like imagine if a gas car, the gas gauge didn't know exactly how much fuel was in the tank. Like that's really what's going on with lithium ion batteries. Like, it's always an estimate of how many electrons still remain to be available to be pulled out of a car. And so that's like what's called the state of charge. So the battery management system has a rough idea, right, of what the state of charge is, but there are some imprecisions in that. And that translates, and then they also, you know, can't predict exactly, you know, how you're going to drive it in the future and what the temperature is going to change to over the next couple hours. And so there's just a lot of inaccuracy just in that range forecast. And then the second thing is different manufacturers have like different approaches to it. And I'll say some of them are more optimistic and some are more pessimistic in telling you how much range you have to go. So, you know, the approach of like, I want to go and look at a car and see how good it is. I'm just going to plug it in, or I'm going to look at plug it in, charge it up and look at the range of what it says. It doesn't work because, like, you have to kind of correct for all the manufacturer differences and all the kind of environmental differences that car is exposed to. And that's why we've just chosen to use this really high-scale sort of, like, statistical approach to be able to look for those differences and know what to filter out and know, you know, when a particular vehicle is lying. You know, I'm not saying they're doing it on purpose. Like, it's just sort of, like, lying about it inadvertently, basically, because the battery management system just doesn't know everything that is happening.
Yeah. Scott, changing gears a little bit, I wanted to talk a little bit about what battery condition does to a vehicle's value. Have you seen vehicles, and you talked about that Leaf with 40 miles of range on it, where a vehicle has reached an inflection point, where no matter the condition of the vehicle otherwise, the battery is at such a state that the car is actually not worth something now because it's not worth the price of replacing the battery?
Right. Yeah, I mean, that particular Leaf, again, I'm not going to pick on Nissan. I actually think they're great cars, and there's plenty of them that we're seeing hold up really well for a long time. But you know, I think that Leaf was worth something to somebody, you know, like as a city car, it's actually a great deal. You know, you just don't want to pay, a ton for it when compared to what you should pay for the same make model year of Leaf that has maybe more odometer miles and a healthier battery, because it just gives you more, you know, from a range perspective and from a battery health perspective. What's interesting is that I think that what happens as the batteries degrade is over time they do get to an inflection point where they're not like that useful, but uh-huh. It's not as a result typically of range. It's as a result, because the range will sort of like will drop off over time. But at the same time, and that's just an indicator of the vehicle's and the battery state of health, at the same time, what you end up is that your ability to draw current out of the car, like in an instant, sort of degrades as well. And so what that means in reality is like you get on the freeway and you floor it, right, to merge up and get up in this, on the speed. And it doesn't, it's sort of just mushy. Like it doesn't give you the pickup that you would sort of need to have. And that's really where the end of life batteries will end up happening. And you're going to want to replace that battery. And that battery, in a neat thing, like that battery can still probably be reused for second life, you know, stationary energy storage if it's sort of manufactured and run through the right process. But you're probably going to want to replace the battery at that point for that reason.
I know it's too soon to look into this, or too soon to really have data on this, but you're talking about the value of the battery in second life. So I've got a 10-year-old EV. I've used up the battery, at least in terms of it being a battery for a motor vehicle, or I guess it's not a motor, an electric vehicle. Do the economics then work for me to replace the battery? I'm going to sell the battery, or I'm going to get some sort of value for it as a second life battery, and then I'm going to buy another probably reconditioned battery. Do those economics work out, or do you think they will work out?
Well, right now, owners are not getting, you know, the owner of a car is not getting paid for the second life battery. There's that market isn't big enough and mature enough for that to happen. I don't think that's out of the question down the road. Right now, most battery replacements that are happening under, you know, within the warranty period. And it's not because they've sort of run out and died of a natural old age. It's because they're sort of like an individual one-off problem that's covered under warranty, right? So, and in that case, the manufacturer owns the battery, and what they're doing, generally speaking, is they're sort of like grouping them together and you know, refurbishing, and then sort of and then in some cases selling them off to like energy storage developers. That's actually happening, but at a small scale right now. You know, I think in the fullness of time, if you have, like, let's say you have a 10-year-old car and it's, like, time to replace it, like, I don't think it's crazy. There is some value to that, and I think what it could do is defray the cost of the new one. You know, I think that's, like, that's it's still going to be pretty small scale because, you know, we're not talking about huge numbers of cars that are 8, 10 years old. But I think that's possible.
Cool. Scott, we've completely run out of time. Remind us how we check out Recurrent.
Sure. Yeah. So if you are a current EV owner, you go to recurrentauto.com and you can click sign up for free battery analysis on a monthly basis. Find out how your battery is doing, and you can you hopefully sell it at a premium when you're ready to. If you are a shopper, you can go to recurrentauto.com and get a free battery report, instant battery report on the car you're looking at. And if you're a car dealer, you can give me a call and I can sign you up to provide that information to your shoppers.
Awesome. Thank you. He is Scott Case, and he is with Recurrent. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, it's quiz time. Stick around.
Welcome back to the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, and I am Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Delighted that you're sticking around today. Hey, Jill.
Yes?
How can folks keep track of your massive amount of social media activity?
Massive and prolific. Yes. So you can find me on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, all under my name, Jill Simonello, and I also use the hashtag car du jour a lot. So just kind of talking about the thing that I am driving today. So Jill Simonello or car du jour are surefire ways to find me wherever I can be found.
The only thing you don't have is a shortwave radio show and a UHF TV show, but you still have time.
Well, that you know of, because does anybody have a UHF show, you know, anywhere anymore? Maybe I have that.
I don't know if they still broadcast in UHF.
Coming soon.
All right, Damon, you've taken a vow of silence, but you're still on Twitter. Tell us about it.
I do. I don't talk about that currency. What was that? I've already forgotten.
Portuguese something,
Portuguese,
right?
Portuguese currency manipulation, yeah. No, none of that content, but I am on Twitter at Damon Bell Likes Cars.
Notice how he completely ignored the vowel of silence comment.
Where you can find a picture of one of my buddies came across Nissan 350Z cologne in a Burlington store, which, given that they stopped making those, what, 13 years ago, I'm assuming that that Nissan 350Z cologne has to be, like, it's older than both my kids.
Oh, wow.
And it's still available for sale in a store.
Didn't we also determine that the stuff had to be from Canada?
I don't know that we figured that out for sure or not. Did you?
Well, because you said there was also Nissan Patrol.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Yes.
A vehicle which was never sold here in the U.S.
Yeah, we could go down a rabbit hole of automaker-branded fragrances, of which there are more than you might think.
So decade-old car-related cologne.
Scents, fragrances.
I see a new quiz topic in our future.
Yeah, there you go.
But if you were looking for a reason to follow Damon on Twitter, there you go.
Yeah.
Men's fragrances. All right, it's quiz time. No Jimmy Smits this week, however. I hope you guys are ready.
Sure. Yes.
All right. Today's car topic is more color. Jill, you go first.
Okay.
Jill, which of the following is not a 2021 Kia Seltos paint color?
Okay.
Mars Orange, Neptune Blue, Cherry Black, or Saturn Silver?
Ooh. I feel like Neptune Blue definitely is. So, what were the last two? It was Cherry Black or Black Cherry and Neptune Silver?
Cherry Black or Saturn Silver?
Saturn Silver. There seems to be a planet theme going on. What was the first one?
Mars Orange.
Mars Orange. I'm gonna go with the odd man out. Just pure guess and say Cherry Black. Black Cherry, right. Whatever that was.
Damon, this question goes to you. Which of these is not a Kia Seltos paint color for 2021? Mars Orange, Neptune Blue, Cherry Black, or Saturn Silver?
I've heard the name Cherry Black somewhere, so I think that color actually exists. I can't remember if it's on Kia, though. I'm gonna take a guess and say Saturn Silver is the fake one.
Wow, good guess. Saturn Silver is the fake. Damon is on the board.
Well done.
1-0, Damon. Damon, this question goes to you. Damon, which of the following is not a 2021 Chevrolet Traverse paint color? That's Chevy's big crossover. Black Cherry, Cajun Red, Burnt Cajun, or Mosaic Black?
Burnt Cajun?
Which sounds like why you might call an ambulance.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I gotta say Burnt Cajun is the fake.
Jill, Black Cherry, Cajun Red, Burnt Cajun, or Mosaic Black?
Yeah, you can't have two Cajuns in the list, so I will go with the horrifying sounding Burnt Cajun, and yeah, that actually is kind of, you know, horrifying.
I'm gonna do a deep pull joke here. Is that what you call Justin Wilson after a cooking accident?
I don't know who that is.
Wow.
Google Justin Wilson. You'll see a guy with red suspenders.
I guarantee you.
Okay. nice add-on there.
All right. Well, you're both correct. Burnt Cajun is not any sort of Chevy car color. It is now 2-1 in favor of Damon. Damon, or Jill, this question goes to you.
All right.
Which of the following is not a 2022 Subaru Outback paint color? Abyss Blue, Brilliant Bronze, Crimson Red, or Desert Copper?
Ooh. I feel like Abyss Blue is a color. What were the last three again?
Brilliant Bronze, Crimson Red, Desert Copper. It could be Desert Copper, and this is a typo.
I'm going to go with Crimson Red because that just sounds redundant.
Sounds good. Damon, Abyss Blue, Brilliant Bronze, Crimson Red, or Desert Copper?
And sorry, this was the, what was the vehicle again?
2022 Subaru Outback.
I think I gotta agree with Jill. I don't think I've seen a red Outback.
Yeah, come to think of it, neither do I.
Yeah, I'm gonna say crimson red as well.
You guys both agree and you're both wrong. Desert Copper is the favorite.
Wow! Okay, I'm going to now challenge anybody out there who is listening that if they ever see a red Subaru Outback, they have to take a picture and tag one of us, because now I'm curious.
All right.
Or use the CarSpotter hashtag, because, like, I honestly don't know that I've ever seen a red Subaru Outback. You're right. Huh?
Mm-hmm. Bonus
now
points.
Now I'm going to see them everywhere.
Bonus points if it has a kayak on the roof.
Or a canoe.
Or a canoe,
yeah. An inflatable kayak. Airboard kayak. All right, it is 2-1. It is anyone's game. Damon, you're in the lead. This question goes to you. Damon, which of the following is not a 2021 Alfa Romeo Stelvio paint color? Stelvio, of course, Alfa's compact crossover. Are you ready?
Yes.
Stromboli gray, Misano blue, Positano blue, Vesuvio gray.
I think I gotta say Stromboli gray is the fake.
Stromboli gray is the fake. Jill, this question goes to you. Stromboli gray, Misano blue, Positano blue, Vesuvio gray.
Yeah, I totally have to go with Stromboli as well, because, by the way, if your Stromboli is gray, that is really not a good thing. Like, don't eat that.
That's even worse than burnt Cajun.
Oh.
All right, yeah. You both agreed that Stromboli gray is the fake. Unfortunately, Positano blue is the
what?
Fake.
Wow! Okay, we need to have a conversation with the people at Alfa Romeo, because clearly that wasn't translating very well.
Now I need to see what that color looks like.
All right, finally, Jill, this question goes to you. You can tie it up with this one. Jill, which of the following is not a 2022 Nissan Frontier paint color? Tactical green, Baja Storm, Red Alert, or Ballistic Moss?
I'm going to go with Ballistic Moss.
All right, Damon, this question goes to you. Which of the following is not a 2022 Nissan Frontier paint color? Tactical Green, Baja Storm, Red Alert, or Ballistic Moss?
Ballistic Moss, I have to agree with Jill. That is not a... Moss is never speedy. So I will agree with Jill and say Ballistic Moss.
Well, you're both correct.
Who all knows? Right. After Stromboli gray, anything
yeah,
is
there possible. Could be some Ballistic Moss. Yeah, I'm not even going to complete that sentence. I'm like, yeah. Never mind.
All right, the score is 3-2. Damon wins this week by a narrow margin. We go to the bonus question because that's what we do. Damon, Germany's first Subway sandwich shop opened in Berlin in 1999. Today there are more than 2,200 Subways in Germany, a fact which leaves me a little sad. Which of the following is not on the menu at the Subway shops in Germany? Are you ready?
Yes.
The breaded schnitzel sub, teriyaki flavor Lay's potato chips, the nacho box, or the spicy vegan patty sub?
Could you read those again?
I can. I would be delighted to.
Yes.
The breaded schnitzel sub, the teriyaki flavored Lay's potato chips, the nacho box, or the spicy vegan patty sub. That all sound fake to me.
I think I'm gonna use reverse psychology here and say the breaded schnitzel, and because that's the most obviously German thing, but isn't schnitzel automatically breaded? You can't have non-breaded schnitzel, can you? I'm gonna say breaded schnitzel is the fake.
Okay, Jill, this question...
Sorry, I just revealed all my logic there.
Well, no, you actually just did the logic that I was going through in my head, because it is the most obviously German item there. So, so for the record, I'm going to say that I agree with you. That's probably the fake, but I'm not going to choose that one because you did.
Okay.
So, the middle two were the nacho box and the other... What was the other one?
The teriyaki-flavored Lay's.
I'm gonna go with the teriyaki flavored Lay's.
All right. Well, this will come as no surprise to you guys, but there is no breaded schnitzel sub.
Ah. Dang it.
I'm alerted, weirded out by a nacho box at a Subway in Berlin.
Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. All right. But
Damon gets the bonus question. Damon, an autographed copy of the quiz is on its way to your desk.
Excellent.
All right. Damon, what's going on at the CG Daily Drive blog this week?
A bunch of good stuff as usual. Two noteworthy test drive vehicles this week. We've got, speaking of Subaru Outbacks, we talked a couple months back about the introduction of the Subaru Outback Wilderness model. That's a new for 2022 version of the Outback. Jill and I were both on that press event. Now we've had a vehicle through our normal test fleet at the office, so we've got our impressions of that vehicle from driving it around our Chicago environs and fuel economy and stuff like that. So the Wilderness, of course, is a beefed up version of the Outback that's got a raised ride height, a sturdier roof rack, and a heaping helping of the matte finish body cladding that transforms a normal station wagon into an SUV looking thing.
Yeah, I really liked that. I don't know what your sense was when you had during the quick test. I haven't had it through my garage yet, but I really liked it on that brief test.
So I've got a question for you guys, and this is just a thing that struck me in the last couple of days about this vehicle. I drove it. I like it, and it is great. And we had the Outback as a 2021 Best Buy pick for a bunch of good reasons. But does this thing just look a little bit over the top to you guys?
To some people, it does. I was talking to one of my friends about it, and he was really turned off by the copious amounts of anodized copper trim pieces that the Wilderness has. They do really jump out at you. Mm-hmm. There's tow hook covers in the front and rear fascia. The Outback badge on the side is in this very distinctive finish that Subaru calls anodized copper. So I can see where some people would think it's over the top. And it's got like a flat black patch on the hood. I don't think it's any worse than some of the more extremely styled Lexus cars. So I have a feeling it's going to do just fine for Subaru in the market. And not surprisingly, they are expanding this Wilderness brand, and they're already coming out with a Forester version. Yeah. So I think that's going to be a success as well.
Yeah, I think the cladding is a little bit excessive, but what I like that they've done that nobody else that I've seen has done is they've kind of put like lines in the cladding. So usually, like, you see the cladding and it's just bam in your face cladding, but this has like texture to it, and so I like how they've actually designed the cladding, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of the Chevrolet Avalanche, but. Damon, what else do we have going on?
We've got a test drive review of the 2022 Volkswagen Taos. That's Volkswagen's new for 2022 subcompact size SUV. I was impressed with how much interior, both in terms of rear passenger space and cargo room, the Taos has. But with the all-wheel drive model, there's a dual-clutch automatic transmission that we and pretty much all the other auto reviewers I've read really dislike because it's a very clunky transmission.
I'm actually surprised. And it's funny because Volkswagen is a company that I generally associate with really polished drivetrains. Mm-hmm. And this was such a disappointment. I was just really saddened by how unpleasant this was to drive at low speed.
Yeah, and especially considering it's the de facto replacement, essentially, for the Volkswagen Golf, which was such a tight, European, classy-feeling, fun-to-drive car. So you're naturally kind of taking a step down with an SUV versus a traditional passenger car hatchback, and that the clunky transmission is just sort of salt in that wound.
Hey, we have run out of time, but I have a quick question for you guys. Do you guys know what September 18th is? That would be yesterday if you're listening to this on WCPT.
Is it? It's not World Guacamole Day, is it?
No, but good guess.
Is it today?
Okay. Oh, no, I have no clue other than 4 days after my mother's birthday.
Well, it's actually my wedding anniversary, but more important, and you're going to want to get your checkbooks out, the 18th was the first day that you could order a Cadillac Lyric.
Oh,
interesting.
Cadillac's first all-electric vehicle. Good-looking thing, at least in pictures. But that goes on sale in February, I think. All right, we have run out of time. Big thanks to our guest today, Scott Case of Recurrent. As always, thank you, Jill, and thank you, Damon. Thanks to producer Lady B and the good folks here at WCPT AM 820 in Chicago. A nod to my friends Steve and Johnny. If you want to be added to the Car Stuff mailing list, and you do, or if you just want to complain about the quiz, drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com. That is carstuff@consumerguide.com. Hey, here's an idea. Let's go ahead and talk more about cars again next week.